pass like ladies' skirts across the grass. Wind blowing all day long, a wind that sings so loud a song.
When we last left Mr. Toad, he had escaped his well-intentioned friends by slipping out of his bedroom window from the second story, by the way, when Mole had left him unguarded for just a few moments. So let's check back in with Mr. Toad. Meanwhile, Toad, gay and irresponsible, was walking briskly along the high road some miles from home. At first, he had taken bypaths and crossed many fields and changed his course several times in case of pursuit. But now, feeling by this time safe from recapture, and the sun smiling brightly on him, and all nature joining in a chorus of approval to the song of self-praise that his own heart was singing to him, he almost danced along the road in his satisfaction and conceit. "Smart piece of work, that," he remarked to himself, chuckling. Brain against brute force, and brain came out on the top, as it's bound to do. Poor old Ratty. My, won't he catch it when the badger gets back? A worthy fellow, Ratty, with many good qualities, but very little intelligence and absolutely no education. I must take him in hand some day and see if I can make something of him. Filled full of conceited thoughts, and such as these, he strode along, his head in the air, till he reached a little town where the sign of the Red Lion, swinging across the road halfway down the main street, reminded him that he had not breakfasted that day, and that he was exceedingly hungry after his long walk. He marched into the inn, ordered the best luncheon that could be provided at so short a notice, and sent down to eat it in the coffee room. He was about halfway through his meal when, as an only too familiar sound approaching down the street made him start a trembling all over. The poop poop drew nearer and nearer, and the car could be heard to turn into the inn yard and come to a stop, and Toad had to hold on to the leg of the table to conceal his overmastering emotion. Presently, the party entered the coffee room, hungry, talkative, and gay, voluble in their experience of the morning and the merits of the chariot that they had brought there along with them. Toad listened eagerly, all ears, for a time. At last, he could stand it no longer. He slipped out of the room quietly, paid his bill at the bar, and as soon as he got outside, sauntered round quietly to the inn yard. There cannot be any harm, he said to himself, in my only just looking at it. The car stood in the middle of the yard, quite unattended, the stable helps and other hangers-on being all at their dinner. Toad walked slowly round it, inspecting, criticizing, musing deeply. I wonder, he said to himself presently, I wonder if this sort of car starts easily. Next moment, hardly knowing how it came about, he found he had hold of the handle and was turning it. As the familiar sound broke forth, the old passion seized on Toad and completely mastered him body and soul. As if in a dream, he found himself somehow seated in the driver's seat, as if in a dream. He pulled the lever and swung the car round the yard and out through the archway. And as if in a dream, all sense of right and wrong, all fear of obvious consequences seemed temporarily suspended. He increased his pace, and as the car devoured the street and leapt forth on the high road through the open country, he was only conscious that he was Toad once more. Toad at his best and highest. Toad the terror, the traffic queller, the lord of the lone trail, before whom all must give way or be smitten into nothingness and everlasting night. He chanted as he flew, and the car responded with a sonorous drone. The miles were eaten up under him as he sped, he knew not whither, fulfilling his instincts, living his hour, reckless of what might come to him. Now, the scene switches to the aftermath of Toad's Grand Theft Auto as he stands before the judge in Britain, called magistrate, in a British court of law. To my mind, observed the chairman of the bench of magistrates cheerfully, the only difficulty that prevents itself in this otherwise very clear case is how we can possibly make it sufficiently hot for the incorrigible rogue and hardened ruffian who we see cowering in the dock before us. Let me see. He has been found guilty on the clearest evidence, first, of stealing a valuable motor car, secondly, of driving to the public danger, and thirdly, of gross impertinence to the rural police. Mr. Clerk, will you tell us, please, what is the very stiffest penalty we can impose for each of these offenses? Without, of course, giving the prisoner the benefit of any doubt, because there isn't any! The clerk scratched his nose with his pen.
Well, some people would consider, he observed, that stealing the motor car was the worst offense, and so it is. But cheeking the police undoubtedly carries the severest penalty, and so it ought. Supposing you were to say, 12 months for the theft, which is mild, and 3 years for the furious driving, which is lenient, and 15 years for the cheek, which was pretty bad sort of cheek, judging by what we've heard from the witness box. Even if you only believe 1/10 part of what you heard, and I never believe more myself, those figures, if added together correctly, toad up to 19 years.
First rate, said the chairman.
So you'd better make it around 20 years, and just to be on the safe side, concluded the clerk.
An excellent suggestion, said the chairman approvingly.
Prisoner, pull yourself together and try and stand up straight. It's going to be 20 years for you this time. And mind, if you appear before us again upon any charge whatsoever, we shall have to deal with you very seriously.
Then the brutal minions of the law fell upon the hapless Toad, loaded him with chains, and dragged him from the courthouse, shrieking, praying, protesting, across the marketplace, where the playful populace, always as severe upon detected crime as they are sympathetic and helpful when one is merely wanted, assailed him with jeers, carrots, and popular catchwords, past hooting school children, their innocent faces lit up with the pleasure they ever derive from the sight of a gentleman in difficulties, across the hollow-sounding drawbridge, below the quirky portcullis, under the frowning archway of the grim old castle, whose ancient towers soared high overhead, past guardrooms full of grinning soldiery off duty, past sentries who coughed in a horrid, sarcastic way, because that is as much as a sentry on his post dare do to show his contempt and abhorrence of crime, up time-worn, winding stairs, past men-at-arms in casket and corselet of steel, darting threatening looks through their vizards, across courtyards where mastiffs strained at their leash and pawed the air to get at him, past ancient warders, their halberds leant against the wall, dozing over a pasty and flagon of brown ale, and on, past the rack chamber and the thumbscrew room, past the turning that led to the private scaffold, till they reached the door of the grimmest dungeon that lay in the heart of the innermost keep. There at last they paused, where an ancient jailer
sat fingering a bunch of mighty keys. "Odds bodkins," said the sergeant of police, taking off his helmet and wiping his forehead. "Rouse the old loon and take over from us this vile toad, a criminal of deepest guilt and matchless artfulness and resource. Watch and ward him with all thy skill, and mark thee well, Greybird. Should aught untoward befall, thy old head shall answer for his, and a murrain on both of them." The jailer nodded grimly, laying his withered hand on the shoulder of the miserable toad. The rusty key creaked in the lock. The great door clanged behind them, and Toad was a helpless prisoner in the remotest dungeon of the best guarded keep of the stoutest castle in all the length and breadth of Merry England.